This presentation is called Are Pregnant Women Getting the Tests They Need? And I'd like to thank Eve Mokotoff, Theodore Jones, and a member who I just see in the audience now, Jolynn Montgomery. I have no relationships to disclose at this time. Vertical transmission of diseases can have serious implications for the health of a newborn. That's well known, and the sad part of it is that these are often preventable. Prenatal screening, in a lot of cases, has been found to be more cost-effective than treating affected newborns afterwards. And much is unknown about the frequency of perinatal screening in the United States. Now, here's just a short list of six here, but screening for the following conditions is recommended by the CDC. We've got group B streptococcus, hepatitis B, rubella, syphilis, chlamydia, and HIV. Of course, the list could go on, but this is a fairly important list here. So the CDC recommends screening for these six during pregnant women's first prenatal visit, and afterwards, it depends on the specific disease, but during follow-up visits and then during labor and delivery. So just to give a little bit of background, group B strep is very common in pregnant women. These are the annual prevalences of the disease in pregnant women just in the United States. Group B strep is very common, and it goes all the way down to rubella. But I should point out that a lower prevalence does not mean a decreased public health significance. For example, rubella, which is extremely rare, if a woman is infected during the first 20 weeks of pregnancy, this child may be born with congenital rubella syndrome, or CRS, which entails a range of serious incurable illnesses, and in about 20% of cases, spontaneous abortion. So our study was very simple. The purpose was to determine the proportion of women who were tested for the following six diseases during prenatal care, and then again during labor and delivery, the same list of six. Just to give you a quick idea of the methods, during the summer of 2007, medical records were reviewed for 220, it's a small sample, but that's all we had time for, 220 randomly selected women who sought obstetric care at a hospital in Detroit between April 1st, 2006 and March 31st, 2007, representing an entire 365-day cycle. And I would also like to point out that these were done through paper medical record abstraction, but then this electronic system had been recently implemented in the hospital, and so this paper medical record abstraction was supplemented with their electronic records, so it's fairly comprehensive. Here's our description of the study population. You'll see I've broken it down by payment source because in Detroit we have a fairly high proportion of Medicaid-covered deliveries, an estimated 52%, and actually you'll see in this case 50% exactly. But you'll see here that the two groups are actually demographically very similar. The one thing I would like to point out is in race ethnicity, that about three quarters of the women were black, and that 14% of all others is fairly large for an other category, but in Detroit, there's a fairly large Arab population in a small suburb and a Hispanic population. So most of that 14% is made up of those two, of course, with some others in there too, but with such a small sample, the power calculations really dwindle when you break it down much more than that. So the first question is most important. So are these women getting tested? The blue bars represent prenatal testing, and the green bars represent testing during labor and delivery. And you'll see, just to look at the trend with prenatal tests, a little over half of the pregnant women were tested at one time or another prenatally for each of those six tests of interest. And actually, the testing during labor and delivery was embarrassingly very low, with the exception of syphilis. And this particular hospital has a very strictly enforced syphilis testing policy during labor and delivery. And like anything else that becomes routine, it magically gets done almost every time. So now, well, the 15% of these women did not, 15% of the women who delivered at this hospital did not receive any prenatal care. And so the question here's, well, what about when a woman presented to the hospital and whether she received prenatal care or not, did that have an effect? And you'll see that those who did not receive prenatal care were actually tested a bit more often on each of those tests, with the exception of syphilis. And then just, I'm not going to bore you with too many bar graphs. I know those bars can really make you dizzy after a while, but just breaking down these testing rates by race and ethnicity, just because what about, could race play a factor in this? And in fact, prenatally, you see these are all prenatal tests for the six, that the black women were tested more often than the white, who were tested more often than all the others, with the exception of HIV there. And then the same look at labor and delivery, is that very interestingly, white women were tested more often both than all other women. And at this point, it's really easy to become interested in the differences between the size of bars, but I want to point out again that the absolute measure of these testing rates is actually very low, with the exception of syphilis. And I argue that the differences between them are a much smaller problem than the absolute measure. So what about, as I alluded to before, what about the difference between payment source? Half these women had their deliveries covered by Medicaid, half were privately insured. There's reason to believe that maybe those who are covered by Medicaid are receiving insufficient care for some reason or another. And actually, you see, if you use prenatal tests as a measure, that's not the case. Medicaid-covered women actually were tested more often prenatally for these six tests. And then again, for labor and delivery, they were tested a bit more, with the exception of syphilis. Okay, so that's enough bar graphs for everybody, isn't it? Okay. So testing rates both prenatally and during labor and delivery are low. And these low testing rates existed across all major demographics. There are some differences between them, and I didn't show any slides on age distribution, but you see that there are some slight changes based on mother's age in the hospital, but really, the bigger issue here, I think, is the low testing rates in general. Now, generalizability is a big issue here because Detroit is unique in many ways. And I just give one small example here. In the last decade, four of Detroit's hospitals have closed, resulting in 1,200 hospital beds lost and almost 4,500 full-time jobs lost. And then just to give you an idea of the income level, 59% of Detroit residents have an income below 200% of the federal poverty level. And I just read this morning that the median income of a Detroit resident is $26,000, which is fairly low. And not to mention the Michigan economy in general is still on its way down. It's the second highest unemployment rate in the United States after Rhode Island, I believe. So this study has some strengths. It's a very relevant question at this time of vulnerability for Detroiters. But at the same time, it justifies a deeper look at perinatal testing rates in other U.S. populations, whether it's rural, urban, suburban, or a statewide or even a national level measure. The biggest limitation is the small sample size, and also that other perinatal screening tests were not examined. We just have a small list of six here. And there's some unavailable data that we didn't collect and we couldn't collect based on medical records. The hospital staff's offer to test for these things and women's refusal to be tested, and also a qualitative measure of pressure on these women to get this testing. So of course the recommendations, these policies are already in existence. They are already recommendations. So how do we enforce them more strictly? Well, we do have some support. We know that it saves lives. If it doesn't save a life in one circumstance or another, then it improves the quality of newborns' lives greatly. And it makes fiscal sense, at least for these six. The cost of, many types of analyses have been done on these six, and it's been shown that this does make fiscal sense, at least for these six, and probably more. And if we continue this and find that this problem exists at more than just Detroit level, then what can we do? Well, that's probably a big step away, but The way I see it, we can construct a prioritized list of perinatal tests based on two things: cost-benefit analyses, which many have already been done, and perinatal public health goals of the United States, and integrate those two to come up with a list and go from there and hopefully find some sort of improvement down the road. Thank you. Yes. Please. Sure. The answer to your first question is that, unfortunately, the medical record abstraction is very limited, and you can't find a lot of things from just medical records, whether it's the paper records or electronically. It's as simple as a checkbox in most cases, and so in this case, no. And your second question for treatment afterwards, I didn't look at anything related to treatment afterwards. I'm not sure how these... Yes, Julie? Oh.
I was just
going to
mention that for all of these conditions, treatment is available to prevent or transmission. That's why it's important to have screening. But I just know
you were right. I couldn't answer, but Jolene Montgomery can always answer. Yes.
I'm curious also about the hospital rates. First of all, when they come in the hospital, do they look to see if they were screened before, so that would influence whether or not they screen them, or they decide to screen, they should screen everybody? And then you know that they've got the policy in place for syphilis, and I work in a hospital, I never really thought of it this way. Like, if there's a policy for syphilis, is there no policy at all for the other? So it's just dependent on the OB who admits, or I mean, how does it?
Well, from this information, you're right. The syphilis is testing during labor and delivery, like I said, has just become routine. You're right, the policies exist and they're recommended, and this hospital well knows it. And unfortunately, it's just not done every time. What was your first question? I'm sorry.
Well, I'm curious if the rate of testing in the hospital is reflective of prenatally. If the woman has been prenatally tested, are they taking that into account when she comes into the hospital and not bothering to test her again?
Right. So can everybody hear these questions? Okay. These records are kept together, both paper, because this hospital does use a lot of paper records, but they do have computers nearby always. But they usually refer to the paper records, and they do have the stack of prenatal care every time the woman comes into the hospital. Does that answer your question? So they should refer to the pages on top of the pages that they're filling out. And maybe this will help. I looked to see how all my bar graphs just showed proportion of women who were tested at least once. And I wanted to see if some women were tested 5, 6, 7 times. It's possible. And in fact, most women who were tested once. Some were tested twice, and very few were tested 3 times. Is that it? Yes, in the back.
I'm sorry if I missed this, but I just couldn't see how many women
Thank you. I didn't mention that before, and I should have. Thank you. That the graphs I've shown only include the women, the prenatal graphs I've shown only include the women who came in for prenatal care.
Okay.
And it excludes it. So it turned out that 15% of the women that delivered these babies in this hospital did not receive any prenatal care, not at this hospital nor any place else. And I excluded those from the bar graphs of prenatal care. No. Yes. Yes, and thank you for pointing that out. Yes, one more. I agree. That's my biggest interest in all of this, and I don't have an answer for you. That's my biggest interest is what is the difference? Well, I won't zoom through the bars again, make us all dizzy. Okay, well. Fairly consistent, yeah. And then by labor and delivery. Oh, I agree. I think these two graphs, if you don't mind, bar graphs are the most interesting part to me. Especially in a place like Detroit, where it's really split 50-50. Half of these women that come in to deliver at this hospital are covered by Medicaid. I agree, it's very interesting, but I don't have an answer, I'm sorry.
Any other questions?
Oh, I see one more.
We have time for one more question.
Good point. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
For-